The Moving Iron Podcast is brought to you by these great sponsors. Are you looking to value your equipment more accurately, target the right buyers and close more deals, reach your ideal customer? Then look no further. Fusible isn't just about ag data, it's about action. Our best-in-class solution empowers you to value your equipment accurately, make informed decisions, and find the perfect prospects. Ignite your dealership's growth at fusible.com/movingiron-podcast. Out in the field, every decision counts. You wouldn't plant without testing your soil, so why would you prospect blind? Introducing EDA, your one-stop shop for ag equipment intel. EDA goes beyond specs and prices. You get deep dive data on every piece of equipment, like UCC filings that help track ownership changes and uncover potential sales leads, D&B firmographics, which help you understand the financial health and buying power of potential customers, market trends that help you stay ahead of the curve, and insights on equipment demands and pricings. With EDA, you're not just looking at data, you're seeing opportunity. You find the right buyer, sell smarter, and build lasting relationships. Visit edadata.com for your free demo and unlock the power of knowledge. For over 80 years, Iron Solutions has been your go-to data source for ag dealers, lenders, and manufacturers. Get powerful appraisal and value forecasting tools that fuel profitable decisions anytime, anywhere. Get your free demo at ironsolutions.com. Iron Solutions, confidence in every click. Today, there are many ways to finance ag equipment, but nobody delivers simple, fast, or flexible financing like AgDirect. Learn more about your options to buy, lease, and refinance equipment at agdirect.com. Valley Transportation has been hauling ag and construction equipment across the country for the past 33 years. Call Parker at 800-657-4910 for all your trucking needs. At Valley Transportation, our goal is to help you reach yours. This podcast is proudly provided by Axon, helping dealers move more iron for the past 100 years. Find out more at axontire.com. Move more iron with Axon.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Moving iron time and time again. Through the years you'll find us here. Moving iron.
Hello and welcome to Moving Iron Podcast. Mark's with Sean Hackett. Sean Hackett is with Hackett Financial out of Boca Raton, Florida, and he's nice enough to come on and talk about what's happening in the marketplace. Sean, how you doing?
Doing pretty good, Casey. Real good.
All right, let's talk a little bit about some South American weather. A lot of pressure down there right now on what's going on. Southern Brazil right now is having some pretty epic floods happening. You're seeing some other weather factors in the northern part of Brazil. So I guess talk a little bit about what you're seeing there, and are you starting to see that play into what the markets are thinking about as far as the Brazilian corn crops go?
Yeah, we want to bring out the concept. We talk about this all the time to our subscribers, but something called marine heat waves. There are these parts, certain areas of the ocean where it just gets super, super hot versus everything else, and they create these extreme high pressure and low pressure systems that can create some extreme weather patterns that get stagnant. So that's what's going on in Brazil right now, is we have this a marine heat wave off of the west coast of South America, and then we have cold air next to it, and it's creating this extreme high pressure system in the center north of Brazil, where they're having record high temperatures, no rain at all. This is affecting second crop corn in a significant way. It's even affecting things like coffee and cotton that are trying to finish out down there as well. But the atmosphere's job is to, wherever something's going on, it has an equal and opposite reaction somewhere else. You have to offset it. An extreme high pressure system then leads to an extreme low pressure system next to it. And that's what we're seeing in southern Brazil. We're getting 10 inch, 15 inches of rain, bridges collapsing, houses flowing down the rivers, just really nasty conditions. And we're trying to finish up the soybean harvest down there. And that's, it's obviously not happening when you're getting that kind of rainfall. And not that that's like it's not like that dramatically changes things, but it's something, when you're trading bearishness as extreme as we've been trading in the soybean market, and you get that, you get short covering. On top of it, we have this strike going down on down in Argentina that's really gotten the meal market going. I mean, we put on, what, $20 or $30 here to the upside on nearby meal prices very, very quickly. So you know, the meal market normally drives soybean market. I mean, that's historically how what's been going on. So looks, you know, we're seeing some interesting things starting to happen. We looks like we completed a double bottom potentially on soybean prices. We're breaking out of a long-term base on corn. We already broke out to the upside on wheat. It just seems like after a long period of nothing happening, you know, we're starting to see these large speculators getting increasingly uncomfortable. And it looks like we're starting to get, you know, some upside price risks that we've been warning would be possible as we got into some closer to these, you know, factors here that would, you know, potentially take the utopian idea that there's nothing ever going to be wrong again in the grain markets forever to maybe things can actually go wrong. And that's where I think we're at right now.
Yeah, that's that is a very utopian thought, because there's plenty of stuff going on in the market right now. All right, so I guess one other thing you talked about before we started recording was that some of the weather models now are starting to show the cold air coming in May that you've been talking about here for the past 6 months. So talk a little bit about
last
that.
Night for the first time, and you know it's early, but you know the models flip around, right. but for the first time, you know, I saw multiple models last night starting to warn about a cold air mass coming into the Midwest somewhere around the middle part of the month. Obviously we're, you know, we got another week to go before we get there. And the closer we get, the more this will, but the fact that we're finally seeing models starting to say, well, maybe there might be something. Of course, you know, a couple of days ago, it was supposed to be the hottest ever, because I always tell everybody these models never see the cold coming until you get pretty close to it. But the fact that last night we're finally seeing some of them, different ones showing that is encouraging, because as you know, it's been one of our forecasts for a while that there would be a risk. Doesn't no guarantee we're going to get a frost, but that would be a risk that we get a cold air snap in the middle of the month that could provide a window to create cold enough temperatures, which at that time, you know, you only need 20, 30 degrees to do it, because you know, wheat's jointing and it's really vulnerable. Mm-hmm. So we'll see. But I just think the fact that some of the models are picking up on it and we're getting, you know, you start looking at the calendar here in a week from now, you're going to be on day 7, 8, 9, you know, it's starting to show that maybe we're onto something here. And obviously if we get, into next week and those models are getting more prevalent and getting more certain, the wheat market, the winter wheat market certainly would have to pay attention to that. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, everyone's always going to ask, well, is it going to be KC wheat? It's going to be SRW. Who's going to get it? You know, trying to micromanage distribution right now is still, you know, very hard to figure on those kind of things. I've always felt, and I still think, that the odds favor more of the KC winter wheat area catching this than the SRW. We'll see.
All right. So if we're going to talk about wheat, I think we need to talk about what's going on over with rice. Rice, world market-wise, has kind of stable that long. It kind of got stable with the supply, but there's obviously weather risks that are going to put that into some peril or a little bit of jeopardy there in that way. So I guess, Sean, looking at the rice market, what do you see there, and what are some of the pressures you see with rice if this wheat situation continues the way we're see it heading?
Well, the wheat market, the Asian wheat price remains extremely high and never really corrected much. So because we've had, you know, we have this ban on rice exports coming out of India, and you know, we just have had a lot of weather problems, and now we've had this another round of historic flooding in southern China. We've been seeing a lot of this flooding every year. And, you know, the first crop rice has just been completely devastated. If people don't know, you know, China's a big place, and they have a first crop rice, second crop rice, and even a third crop rice in certain areas. But this is affecting the first crop rice, and it's just a complete disaster. So, you know, one of the largest exporters of rice in the world having a major blow to their first crop rice crop at a time when rice prices are already high and India is not wanting to sell, And if we were to catch some kind of a wave here higher with higher wheat prices due to drought in South Russia and here in the U.S. and a frost, you know, you can just see that the things that people need to eat to stay alive, which is half the population out of the 8 billion or 9 billion people we have, 4.5 to 5 billion have to have rice and wheat on a regular basis for their families not to starve. Not that I'm saying that glibly. I'm just saying these two products are very important. And, you know, if the wheat market starts to go up, it increases the urgency to not only lock up cheap wheat, but also the urgency to make sure you lock up rice prices as well, because rice has been higher than this, you know, in terms of its all-time highs. And, you know, one would not want to have to chase that if you're really in a situation where you need the product very, very badly. So.
One last thing, then we'll close it down here. When you look, I read an article this morning that came out, all the ground beef samples that got sent to the National Veterinary Service laboratories all came back negative for H1N or H5N1 bird flu. So that's just another signal, I think, to the beef market that, hey, we got an opportunity here to kind of shuck off the scares of bird flu that we saw in the dairy side. So I guess as you're looking at the cattle market with the last couple of days worth of news that's come out here over the last week or so, I guess, have you seen anything out of the ordinary happen in the cattle market that you shouldn't see this time of the year, I guess?
I mean, the way I'm looking at the cattle situation, I think the reason why beef cattle are not getting this, you know, they're outdoors, right? I mean, we know from COVID, which is this call even flu, whatever, it's a flu. COVID's a flu. We know if you're out in the outdoors, sunlight, you're just less susceptible to getting it. And we know that when you jam a bunch of cows into a stall like they do in dairy, and they're right on top of you, anybody ever go walk through those dairy operations and they're just all pressed and, you know, well, you're going to get it, right? I mean, it just that's so. Mm-hmm. So I think that this is just reinforcing the idea that this is not likely going to be a beef cattle problem. It's going to be a dairy cattle problem. And what it also, you know, we heard the other day is that pasteurization, according to the USDA, absolutely positively deactivates any fragments if that supply were to get into the marketplace. And they're testing, now they're going to be testing every cow before just to make sure. But if by chance some of it were to get in, pasteurization 100% deactivates, meaning you're not going to get sick. So I think we can safely say within reason that the demand side of the issue is not likely going to, we're not going to get a demand side reaction to this. And I don't think we're going to get a mass herd liquidation event from dairy from this, meaning the dairy cows aren't dying from this. They're losing production significantly in the first 45 days, and then there's some residual loss for the next 3-4 months, but they're not dying. So, and I don't see anything that says we're going to go, you know, change our culling habits from this. So I don't see that, you know, oversupplying the low end of the beef market either. Bottom line is, I think from the cattle market, I think we can kind of take the flu off the table. I know Colombia did this to ban, but I don't really see any reason for other countries to follow. And I think Colombia is going to reverse course given this information. And so to me, the cattle market still is based on its own fundamentals, which is too many animals on feed. The weights are up significantly year over year because of the warm finish to the winter and because we have cheap feed at the moment. And, you know, and consumer behavior is retrenching. We're seeing a lot of indications that the consumer is pulling back due to economic reasons, and beef is not a very cheap item to put into your budget. So if you're going to try to remove something to reduce your budget, reducing your beef consumption is an easy way to do it. So I think beef has other reasons why it's going to probably remain stuck in neutral, going back and forth and back and forth through the springtime. And right now we're going into a kind of a, you know, heading south period of time, but I don't see anything. I think when the beef cutoff price gets to 300 plus, the consumer says no way. And we get down to 265 on the beef cutout. The consumer says, okay, we'll buy a little. I think we're stuck in a wide-ranging sideways trading range for the foreseeable future. I don't think flu is going to change that dynamic right now. I think it's pretty clear cattle can move on as it was going to and not have to worry about this. I think that's where we're at right now.
Okay. Got a question from a listener here. The question is, are there any specialized investment vehicles like Gladstone Land Corporation, for example, with a focus on investment in farmland, olive trees, avocados, cocoa, bananas, etc., or production of gourmet dairy products like feta cheese, Italian light cheeses, etc.? If yes, could Mr. Hackett name a few?
I mean, the only one that I know that invests in tree crops, not necessarily everything that your caller mentioned, but a lot of tree crops, is the Gladstone Farmland ETF, traced publicly. It's a stock. I think the symbol is LAND, Larry, Alpha, Nancy, David. You have to remember, it's a real estate investment trust, which means they hand back like 80. I think that by law, they have to hand back 80 or 85% of all the income back to shareholders in a dividend payment. The problem with something like this is it's highly impacted by interest rates. When interest rates go up, real estate investment trusts fall, because it's really they're generating a high dividend yield, and so the yield has to be competitive with competing rates of the 10-year bond. So if yields go up, you know, these tend to go down, and vice versa. So, you know, you have to kind of be a little careful about something like this. There's other factors that make it go up and down, not just interest rates, but interest rates are a huge portion, because a real estate investment trust, by its very nature, is highly indebted. And periodically they have to roll over that debt. And if they have to roll over it at a higher cost of capital, you know, you got to really kind of time the interest rate cycle. If you think we're at a top in rates right now, then we might be coming down, let's say, you know, for a while. Probably, you know, this is probably something to take a look at. My overall, as you know, Casey, you know, we broke the 35-year downtrending in interest rates, and it's a 35-year cycle down and up, which means we're now in a perpetual overall uptrending period for the next 35 years. Doesn't mean we won't have a down year at all, but overall, the interest rate trend is going against things like the real estate investment trust, which are highly yield sensitive. I just, you know, to me, it's just a short-term vehicle for trying to time interest rate moves if someone is very good at doing that. Other than that, I'm not sure this is a great place to be. The only other company that I know that invests in tree crops, like cocoa and such, is a company called Demetra. They don't trade publicly, but they do have a cryptocurrency called the Demetra, DMTR is the symbol. I'm not going to, you know, explain to anyone how to go buy cryptocurrencies, but essentially a cryptocurrency value, like Bitcoin or like Ethereum, you know, people know these things. The value of it goes up as the network effect grows, meaning the more people that are using the medium of exchange, the more the demand for that exchange grows, and the more the value of that exchange grows. And that's why Bitcoin, you know, goes up in value, or Ethereum has gone up in value, because more and more people are using it and the network effect grows. Well, Demetria is the same thing, that they have this cryptocurrency that everybody in their network uses to buy fertilizer, to invest in avocado trees. And the more that network grows, the more the network effect grows, the more the demand for the Demetria currency grows. And so, you know, that would be another obviously substantially higher risk way to look at it, to look. But, you know, DMTR, the Demetria cryptocurrency, is a high risk way to potentially participate in a company that invests all over the world in a lot of tree crops. But obviously you have to be savvy. You have to understand that these cryptocurrencies go up, you know, all over the place, and you have to be comfortable with that kind of volatility, and you have to be comfortable owning a cryptocurrency. This one you'd have to own in a crypto exchange, Casey. It's not something that has an ETF that you can trade, like Bitcoin has an ETF that you don't have to buy it on a crypto exchange. So all that being said, you know, that would be the only other thing I'm aware of that someone could participate in if they're comfortable with the increased risk of what a cryptocurrency type play involves. So,
Right on. All right. Sean, good place to stop. Folks want to reach out to you and get more information about Hackett Financial and what you guys are doing over there. What's the best way to do that?
We have a Twitter page at Feridex11, F-E-R-I-D-E-X. We also have a website, Hackett, H-A-C-K-E-T-T, advisors.com. In both places, including LinkedIn, we put some interviews out and we make some posts from time to time to go over our cycle work, our statistics, our forecast, to see if how we look at the world in agriculture might be of value to those that watch and listen to your show.
Right on. Sean, appreciate you being on, man. We'll catch you again next week. Right on. I'm Casey Seymour with Moving Iron Podcast. Check me out on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Moving Iron LLC. Go to LinkedIn at Moving Iron Podcast. You can also find the YouTube channel and on TikTok at Moving Iron Podcast as well. Check that out. Go to MovingIronLLC.com for everything Moving Iron related and get all the information for the Moving Iron Summit coming up here in Nashville, Tennessee, November 4th through the 6th. So with that, I'm Casey Seymour with Sean Hackett. Let's go move some iron, folks. Out.
The Moving Iron Podcast is brought to you by these great sponsors. Are you looking to value your equipment more accurately, target the right buyers and close more deals, reach your ideal customer? Then look no further. Fusible isn't just about ag data, it's about action. Our best-in-class solution empowers you to value your equipment accurately, make informed decisions, and find the perfect prospects. Ignite your dealership's growth at fusible.com/movingiron-podcast. Out in the field, every decision counts. You wouldn't plant without testing your soil, so why would you prospect blind? Introducing EDA, your one-stop shop for ag equipment intel. EDA goes beyond specs and prices. You get deep-dive data on every piece of equipment, like UCC filings that help track ownership changes and uncover potential sales leads, D&B firmographics, which help you understand the financial health and buying power of potential customers, market trends that help you stay ahead of the curve, and insights on equipment demands and pricings. With EDA, you're not just looking at data, you're seeing opportunity. You find the right buyer, sell smarter, and build lasting relationships. Visit edadata.com for your free demo and unlock the power of knowledge. For over 80 years, Iron Solutions has been your go-to data source for ag dealers, lenders, and manufacturers. Get powerful appraisal and value forecasting tools that fuel profitable decisions anytime, anywhere. Get your free demo at ironsolutions.com. Iron Solutions, confidence in every click. Today, there are many ways to finance ag equipment, but nobody delivers simple, fast, or flexible financing like AgDirect. Learn more about your options to buy, lease, and refinance equipment at agdirect.com. Valley Transportation has been hauling ag and construction equipment across the country for the past 33 years. Call Parker at 800-657-4910 for all your trucking needs. At Valley Transportation, our goal is to help you reach yours. This podcast is proudly provided by Axon, helping dealers move more iron for the past 100 years. Find out more at axontire.com. Move more iron with Axon.
Moving iron in the 21st century. Hardworking people working hard for you and me. Time and time again, through the years you'll find us here.